to Show Me Your Mic, the podcast that talks to fellow podcasters about their podcasting and podcasts. Today I'm joined by Jeremy Keith, who actually doesn't podcast, but he does run a great service called Huffduffer that aims to help listeners of podcasts discover other great podcasts. So I talked to Jeremy about the origins of Huffduffer, the name, the service, where it all came from, the future of the service, and of course what podcasts he listens to. We had some fun with Skype in this episode, so apologies in advance for any little dropouts and drop-ins and swear words spoken in Skype's general direction. Be sure to stick around for the end of the show when we talk a little bit about SSKTN's future and as it relates to Show Me Your Mic. So thanks for listening and enjoy the show. My thanks to Jeremy for joining me on Show Me Your Mic. He's a author, speaker, HTML5 guru. Amongst other things, I have his book sitting on my shelf over here. If I could pass it through the Skype, I'd get it autographed.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll just say at the outset, for more sort of, if you're interested in Jeremy's work in that arena, you can check out the Non-Breaking Space Show chat we did with Jeremy just before Christmas, but I'll have a link in the show notes to that. A great chat that Christopher Schmidt and Sam and Jeremy had, particularly on I love the discussion you guys had on owning your own data and that whole sort of.
Yeah, that was good fun.
Yeah.
That was a good fun chat. Only slightly marred by the clicking noise that turned out to be on the track.
That caused me no amounts of grief, but I just in the end thought, I'll just leave it.
It adds to the charm.
Exactly. The charm. And that way we kind of weeded out any of the real nerdy hardcore audiophiles who would be annoyed by things.
Yeah.
Lose a few listeners to, yeah. So the main reason why, besides just getting the chance to chat with you about Brighton and the UK and all sorts of other things, the main reason why I want to chat with you on Show Me Your Mic is not so much that you have your own podcast that I'm as aware of, but more what you're doing in the podcasting community. And something that's become a bit of a passion interest of mine in promoting is the site you built called Huffduffer.
That's right, yeah.
So maybe just I'm curious, why did you start Huffduffer? Where did the genesis of that idea come from?
Well, I think the genesis was many years ago. I'm talking about like 2006, 2007 maybe. I remember John Hicks, designer here in the UK. He would make this podcast of songs from bands. You know, a band would have a website and they'd throw up a couple of MP3s. And so John made a podcast. It was literally just an RSS feed that pointed directly to the MP3 on the band's website. And so he was making the RSS feed, but he wasn't making the audio, right? And that's it was a bit of a revelation to me to realize, oh, right, there's a separation between the podcast, which is this RSS file, and the contents, which are audio files that could be anywhere. And that a podcast is really just another form of hypertext. You're linking to audio files. And meanwhile, for a couple of years, I'd kind of been wanting to collect not so much music, but spoken word things. Like maybe there'd be a conference and the audio was recorded and there was one really good talk. And meanwhile, over on this website, they've released this audio and there's this one really good episode. So this idea of cherry picking sort of individual episodes or individual talks or individual songs without having to subscribe to a whole podcast of that stuff was something I'd kind of wanted for a while. And then when I saw John do it with this sort of Found Sounds podcast of music, I thought, oh, that's what I want to do. And then I thought, well, I don't want to write an RSS file by hand because that seems like a lot of work. Yeah. So the typical thing, you know, I'll automate it. I'll write a tool that will help me, you know, automatically generate an RSS feed of sound files from all over the web. And when I was doing that, I thought, well, you know, this is useful for me. Maybe it'll be useful for other people too. So that's when I started the idea of I'll make it like a service that other people can do. But still the whole time thinking, you know, if nobody else uses this, that's absolutely fine. It's still useful for me. And so I launched it, and that was Huffduffer, and I started using it straight away. And then other people did start using it, and that was really nice. And so even though it's useful to the individual and you don't need to know that anybody else is even using it, you get these nice sort of network effects from the fact that other people are using it, especially if other people are tagging things and you know, allowing things to be found easier through search. So now we're used to be, you know, I'd spend all my time finding audio files out there on the web. Now, 50% of the time, I actually find the files on HuffDuff itself. I find, you know, oh, somebody else has learned something interesting. That sounds good. I'll HuffDuff that myself.
And where did the name come from?
Built to scratch my own itch.
Oh, I lost you.
But then it's also very nice that other people use it too. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Did I cut out?
You did for just a second. I think we had some Skypey fun, which is the joys of podcasting. And still in 2014, we haven't conquered that one.
Skype.
A podcast doesn't go by without. I'm sure if we could somehow catalog the archives that are linked, which is, that's what's kind of neat about HuffDuffer, is that there's no, you know, like you said, you're not storing the files, so it's not that there's massive server stores that you're dealing with, I would imagine.
Right. I mean, HuffDuffer itself is basically text only. It's just hypertext. And all the audio files are wherever the original publisher published them.
Yeah. Which it's, that's what I was wondering, what I asked you when the Skype sort of cut out there was where did the name HuffDuffer come from?
Oh, I see. When I was making the service, I was trying to come up with a good name, and it was actually my wife suggested a name, because we had both been reading Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson. And there's a bit in that book about HuffDuffing, which is a real thing that was done, that you do, for example, during the war, which is all about triangulating signals. So if you have a receiver or a few receivers and positioned in different geographical areas, then you could triangulate the source of a signal. So you could find the source of an enemy transmission, for example. So and the term comes from HFDF, which is high frequency direction finding, and that would get shortened to just HuffDuff, right? The HFDF would be referred to as HuffDuff. And I thought, well, it's nerdy. It's got that connection to Cryptonomicon and Neal Stephenson, which makes it extra nerdy. So I thought HuffDuffer, and I deliberately didn't disavow it. I deliberately didn't take out all the vowels, like all the hip services were doing at the time. So I had to keep the ER at the end and not just make it HuffDuffer, right, which would have been that would have been on trend at the time.
Yeah, but look who's laughing now. The vowels are back in vogue.
Yes, I've still got all my vowels.
Which, ironically, that's SSKTN is my city's name without the vowels. I went the other way. But it's dying, I think. So, but it's such a neat service, and I love it. I know that I can't remember where I first heard it, but I don't think it was Merlin Mann, but he's definitely been the one who's been pimping it or pitching it.
Yeah, he really likes it, and that's immensely gratifying, because he knows his stuff when it comes to podcasts and audio. But I think it appeals to a certain kind of person if it's scratching the same itch that I had, which is essentially I'm looking for. I used to say it was like delicious, but for audio, right? That idea of, oh, I'm going to link to this thing and I'll tag it and I'll be able to find it for myself later. But actually, I stopped describing it as like delicious for audio, and now I kind of describe it more like Instapaper for audio, where instead of I'll read this later, it's like I'll listen to this later, and that resonates with some people, and they get it, and it clicks, and they end up using the service, a lot. And other people, they look at it and say, "Nah, I don't see why I would want to use this," and that's absolutely fine as well. But Merlin, clearly it clicked. It fitted with the way that he. I think the way that he, browses the web and gathers things and links to things. So that was very gratifying to have someone like Merlin Mann using it.
Yeah, when I'd asked him I'd mentioned him that you were going to be on the show just on Twitter. I wasn't sitting with him talking. Anyways, he just wanted to pass on that he loves you. So that's
very, very nice of him.
There you go.
he's a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy.
Yes. Yeah, and you actually read my notes, because I was going to ask you, how do you explain it to people? Because that's often what it's kind of like is with Instapaper too. When I explain it to people, they either gloss their eyes kind of gloss over, and they're kind of like, why would you just not read it? Why would you not, why would you want to save it for later? And same thing with HuffDuffer. It's kind of like, I'll just listen to the podcast. Like, I know my mother-in-law, she listens to podcasts by going to the webpage and pressing play and sits in front of the computer and listens while she, presumably while she's doing other things. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's her.
And, you know, if that's the way you want to do it, that's absolutely fine. Like, it's, you know, certain people do things certain ways, and it's for a particular kind of person, I guess. Mm-hmm.
But I love, that's what I love about what your service offers. It's not even so much the listen to it later aspect, which is great, but the what you said, the sort of cherry picking, that's the way I use it. And it sounds like, you know, what Merlin, what it triggers for him too, is that ability to just grab one episode, taste it, and then, you know, sort of go back for more if you really want to, or just cherry pick, you know, you follow. We have so many interview shows on the web and podcast form like this one, where maybe you just want to follow everything that Jeremy Keith talks about, but don't want to necessarily listen to me talk all the time or whatever, or vice versa.
And it can be good for you know, testing shows out. Like, I'll have to have an episode and then another episode and then another episode, and eventually realize, you know what, I actually like all the episodes of this podcast. I'm just going to subscribe to the whole podcast. So it's kind of a nice way of testing a podcast without having to subscribe to the whole thing and, you know, have it pop up every week.
Yeah.
And yeah, other podcasts, it's like, yeah, no, I like one episode here and there. And if it sounds like something that's the subject matter particularly interests me, then I'll huff it. Otherwise, maybe not, you know, do it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. So do you want it to be, this is what's, it's kind of a, one of those neat services where it feels like, again, like within that right niche of, you know, Instapaper folks or whatever, similar kind of folks, where the popularity of the service, it kind of seems like one of those things that, where it should be more well known, and but you do very little, as far as I can tell anyways, to sort of promote it. It's not like I see Facebook ads for it or, you know, or those kinds of things. It's kind of just like you let, there isn't, you know, there's not advertising on it. It's not something that's making you money in as much as I can tell anyways. So it's sort of just a labor of love kind of side project thing that you do?
Very, very much so, yeah. It's not intended to make money, and it would feel really strange to put ads on it or anything like that. It's, like I said, I mean, it's a useful service for me, and I'm getting something out of it myself, and other people using it, that's fine. I would like it if the right kind of people could find it. Like, every so often someone will find Huffduffer and they'll say, oh, this, I've been wanting something like this for years. I didn't know this existed. This is great. And I have the horrible feeling maybe there's more people like that out there, and they don't know about Huffduffer because I, as you say, I don't really do any promotion for it. I don't mention it that often. And that would be a shame if, like, there's just individual people who would really, really benefit from using it, and obviously would also contribute a lot to Huffduffer by Huffduffing interesting stuff. So I do sometimes feel bad about that, like, oh, maybe I should be, you know, getting the word out more. But on the other hand, you know, I think most people, if I did do a big push, a big publicity push, and said, you should come and use Huffduffer, they would come, they would try it out, and they'd go, no, it's not for me, because it really isn't for most people, I think. It was interesting because I did get a big influx of people for not the wrong reasons, but not the usual reasons, which was when the site launched, I did the sign-up form in this kind of, I guess it was interesting way.
Right. So, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Right. So this kind of I remember Dan Cederholm linked to it, and he said, yeah, check out the Mad Libs sign up form on Huffduffer, where it's written like, you know, my name is blank and my email address is blank, blah, blah, blah. Now, I didn't think that was any big deal. I just thought, what I was actually going for was to make it more like signing up was almost like a declaration, like I hereby declare I will have to blah, 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 you know, and just a regular sort of label form didn't seem the right way to do it. So it's just CSS, right? It's just a different styling on a form. Underneath the hood, it's still like any regular web form. But it kind of spread like wildfire, especially after, you know, Dan and other people were talking about it. Luke Rabluski linked to it and all these people. So that was great, and it was very gratifying. Although I had no idea what Mad Libs was, by the way. That was a game I'd never come across, so yeah. I didn't know what Dan was talking about. You know, Mad Libs, it sounds some weird, you know, street slang.
Yeah. some Boston area slang.
Yeah. What up, Dan?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I had a lot of people coming and basically just using the form to sign up just to test it out.
You know,
they had no interest in the actual product, Huffduffer, the service. They were just interested in, this is a neat little form. So it's also, you know, fake accounts being set up. And it was actually a bit of a pain. So I could almost imagine if I did do a big publicity push or did, you know, spend money on advertising the site, I might get a lot of the same stuff, like people signing up for the sake of signing up.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of services have that, where like what they want is they want people to sign up. They want people, that's their main goal, is get people to sign up. Whereas I'm quite happy, you know, if you don't sign up, if it's not your thing, it's absolutely fine. So I'm torn, because on the one hand, I don't want to have, you know, hordes of people descending and signing up and then not actually getting anything out of the service. But on the other hand, I do sometimes feel like, oh, I bet there's one or two people out there who would really benefit from Huffduffer, because they'd have the same itch, you know, that I had, that just to cherry pick songs like that. But yeah, no, I don't really promote it that much, and it's definitely not a money making enterprise at all. Very much just labor of love, I guess. And like I said, because the site is essentially text only, because I'm not hosting audio files, it's not exactly expensive to run the site. You know, it's not high maintenance.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what it's just such a neat thing, and that's where hopefully, through this, like, you know, having other primarily podcasters listen to this show, and hopefully they can hear about it. Now, to me, that would be the natural sort of audience to get the word out a bit more about it, so that if there is somebody out there who's, you know, letting people know about it on their shows, that kind of thing, just to spread the word.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, it's been great in that the promotion that has been done for Huffduffer has been done not by me, but by people who really like Huffduffer. Like,
yeah, which, you know, is the best.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I mean, when Merlin is on a show and he'll be saying, oh, yeah, Huffduffer is a great service, I really like it. And Marshall Kirkpatrick from Read Write Web, and at one point he recorded a screencast. Here's how I use Huffduffer, and he did it. And I was kind of slapping my forehead going, why didn't I think of that? I'm the one running the site. I should be the one making screencasts. And it hadn't even occurred to me. And here's someone, it's not even his website. He just likes it enough that he wants to share it and show people how to use it and stuff. And I remember Matt Howey from Metafilter did a blog post on how he uses, I think, Instacast on iOS, and how you grab your Huffduffer feed and get it into Instacast and stuff like this. And again, I was like, I should be blogging that stuff. Like, well, you know, that's supposed to be my job. It's kind of great that other people are doing it for me, but I shouldn't rely on it. You know, I should be thinking about these things and actively doing them instead of being surprised every time someone does it for me.
Well, that's totally, that's how, and I think it's that love of a service, and you kind of want it to, like, that, because I've done, I think I was just trying to find the link, I can't remember where it is, but I did a screencast too, because I was like explaining it to friends or whatever, and, you know, in text form, or talking, you know, over a drink or whatever about it, and it kind of just doesn't really click. And so I was like, oh, I should just do a screencast of it. But yeah, it's kind of like you want to share this neat thing, and that's goes back to, I think, your idea that it's, you don't need to advertise, because it kind of, it's like when a band gets big, you know, you don't want to sell out or whatever.
But it is, I would like to be able to get the idea across easier. And you're right, screencasts are actually really good. And I wish I had thought of it myself. And it's great that you did a screencast. Well, I ended up, I've got an about page on Huffduffer, and I wrote a text, and I realized, like, oh, maybe there's a nicer way to consume this. And I didn't think screencasts, and actually that would have been perfect. But what I did do was I got Brad Colbo, who's very talented illustrator, to illustrate the about page, because I remember when Google Chrome came out and they commissioned Scott McCloud to do a comic book explaining Google Chrome, and you end up reading a 40-page comic book about a web browser, and it's like, I never would have read a 40-page text document about a web browser.
Exactly.
But I've just sat here and read all about, you know, how browser rendering works, and it's like, oh, actually there's something here, you know, this idea of using comics to explain a concept is, it's a nice trick, basically. So I got Brad to do some illustrations for the about page, which is really nice, because it gives, you know, it looks nicer, frankly, thanks to that, and hopefully gets the idea across as well. But I still struggle to have that elevator pitch, you know, that way of describing it. Someone says, so what's Huffduffer? I keep having to explain it in relation to other services. I can only say it's like Delicious, or it's like Instapaper, but for audio, you know. And then you just end up sounding like one of those ridiculous startups, you know, like it's Instagram for dogs. It's, you know,
yeah,
Facebook for astronauts or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this for that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Which, that's when you said, as soon as you told me or told the story about the forum, that's exactly where I remember seeing it, because probably Dan or whoever that I followed at the time linked to it, and I remember signing up purely because of that, like because of that, the fun little forum that you did, which at the time was just kind of unique enough to stick out amongst all the other boring forms that people were using for signups and stuff. And
yeah, I mean, it's a gimmick, basically. It's the novelty factor. Although Luke Rabluski did do some A/B testing with a client on some forms where they had one version of the form and it was a regular old-fashioned form, and then one version was more the Huffduffer style. And they did see, you know, better conversion, but I'm still wary of saying, hey, you know, turn all your forms into this Madlib form, because if I'm applying to, you know, open a bank account or get travel insurance or something, I do not want to be, you know, inputting into a friendly style form. I kind of want that seriousness, and I want it, you know, if I'm doing my tax return, I do not want it to be in a Mad Libs style form. But for certain kinds of interactions, I think it can work pretty well.
Yeah, I just found actually the article on Luke's site, which back from, well, this is one of them anyways, from 2010 anyway, so it's years old, but yeah, it seems something like a 25-40% increase again, but depending on the style of
And to be honest, I mean, the novelty factor is going to be a big thing. If everyone started doing this, then it's novel anymore. So, it's essentially a gimmick, but for certain kinds of forms, I think it could work pretty well.
Yeah. And so one thing I wanted to talk about is in relation to the audience of this show is advice for folks like podcasters who are putting out shows in order to do a better job of getting tags into Huffduffer if their users are. Or just, yeah, advice for podcast creators. What can they, and I guess particularly, like I speak web geek stuff a bit, but I know some listeners probably are just using a service and don't even maybe know how to get into that kind of stuff. But what advice would you give?
I guess first thing to say, I mean, this is also, you know, it's my job to try and figure out this stuff. So I need to do a better job of figuring out that kind of stuff. When you give me a URL, I need to be better at figuring out what's the headline, what's a good description, what are the tags in this page. But at the most basic, when you put in a URL to Huffduffer and it goes and grabs that page to see, okay, what, first of all, is there an audio file on this page? And it'll find, if there's one MP3 file, then it'll pre-fill that. If there's multiple, then you'd have to choose from a list. And then it grabs the title of the page as the title. So having a good title element is always good. So, you know, if the title of the podcast is My Awesome Podcast, and then you go to, you know, episode 5, instead of the title being My Awesome Podcast episode 5, it just still says My Awesome Podcast. And then whoever's half-duffing it has to manually change the title, or most people won't change the title, and then you end up with, you know, an undescriptive title. So a good title element is good. And then the most basic way of getting the sort of metadata in a good description and tags is using the meta element. So there's a meta name equals description that you can have in the top of your document and the head of your document. And that's the first place I'll look. If there's, you know, meta name equals description, content equals, and then it's usually a string describing your awesome podcast, that's what I'll grab. And likewise, there's a meta element for keywords. Right. This was originally intended for search engines, 15 years ago. And they've kind of fallen out of favor because they were spammed so badly that search engines basically just stopped paying attention to them. But they're kind of still in use. And if you do have a meta keywords element in the head of your document, I'll grab those keywords and pre-fill those tags. But if I come across a page that has neither of those meta elements, then I kind of go to phase two of trying to figure out, okay, what's this page about? And for phase two, I used the same code that Readability uses. They open sourced the code that they use to kind of look at a web document and figure out which bits of the content and which bits are just kind of, you know, secondary to the content. So I used that, and it's pretty good. It's pretty good at grabbing that stuff. Sometimes there'll be extra stuff you really probably wouldn't want in the description, like links to tweet this or, some stuff around the show notes that maybe aren't part of the show notes, they'll still get included. But on the whole, it's pretty good. I think there's another API again that I used that basically does a kind of an analysis of the whole document and figures out which terms are being used the most, and I'll turn those into tags. So if the same phrase or word is used multiple times in the document, then it's a pretty good bet that that's a tag. So it gets fuzzy, basically. If you provide the meta elements, then it's kind of in your hands, and you're saying, this is what I want as the description, and this is what I want as the keywords, and that's great. If you don't, then it's kind of left to a much more fuzzy parser. And sometimes it's fine, and sometimes it's not so fine. You get some really strange tags. But I need to do more along those lines in terms of figuring out what to use. And also, I was saying I grabbed the title of the page. That's not necessarily true. If there's only one MP3 file and you link to that MP3 file using some string of text, I would grab that string of text as the title, unless the string of text is something like download here or listen now or something. Mm-hmm. So I've got like exceptions in place to catch those kind of things and say, okay, that's not actually the title of the podcast. Go to the title element again. Maybe I should actually go straight to the title element. I don't know. Yeah. But this is something I need to get better at of figuring out this stuff. And actually something that I definitely need to work on. So all of the parsing I'm doing right now, it happens on the server. It happens, you give the URL and then the Huffduffer server is using PHP to grab the source and look at what's in it and figure out the description, figure out the text. That's all fine. But more and more podcasters are using SoundCloud.
Yeah, that was my...
Yeah.
This is actually where my renewed... I've been a fan of Huffduffer for a long time and periodically would mention it. But as of late, SoundCloud's made a big push into podcasting, understandably so. Because they're an audio service, it seems like a logical fit. But I see more and more podcasters using it, and then I try and use Huffduffer, makes me angry.
it's tricky because, like you say, it's SoundCloud are getting into podcasting, but that's not actually where their bread and butter is. And the majority of the content on SoundCloud is music, and so the things you would do for music are sometimes the opposite of what you would do for podcasting.
Yeah.
So music generally, you do want to obfuscate that final URL. You don't want people to be able to just grab it and take it away. Maybe it's more important that they listen to the song right then because it's only 3 minutes. Whereas with a podcast where it's half an hour long, and the whole point of podcasts is that you listen later, you grab it and you take it with you and you can download it, you can stream it wherever. Then all of those things they've put in place to make it good for musicians is kind of making it tougher for podcasters. And I talked to someone from SoundCloud about this, and that was kind of what she was saying. It was like, well, if they do things to make it better for podcasters, they're going to end up pissing off the musicians and vice versa. So I do get it. But I guess what I have to do now is I have to get my hands dirty in JavaScript, because the way that SoundCloud works is you just drop one line of JavaScript, one script element into the middle of your page, and it generates the player and it's beautiful and all that, and it generates everything. But that means that on the server side, if Huffduffer is saying, okay, grab the source of this page, there is no audio file to be found in that source. I have to wait till the page is actually loaded in a browser before I can go, okay, now is there, has an audio file been injected into an iframe or however it's working. Basically, I've got my work cut out for me. To do this, and I need to get on that, which is to kind of follow where people are going. And if people are using SoundCloud, then I have to go with that and figure it out. I did look at the SoundCloud API to see if there was some help there, but it's again, they've got this weird system of tokens, and they do make it hard. If you aren't the owner of the audio, they make it hard for someone else to grab that audio, which, like I said, if it's music, that kind of makes sense. If it's a podcast, it doesn't make quite as much sense. So I need to get onto that. But I mean, the main thing is, if you have a podcast, even if you're using SoundCloud, if you could still just have a link to the audio file just in text in the HTML, that would be great. Just saying, download, just a link or something that says download the audio file that links to an MP3 file, that would be really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Which that's where I know for new podcasters, the whole, I think setting up a WordPress blog or whatever, that's, fairly easy to do in terms of understanding how to post an episode. But hosting the file is where it gets kind of fuzzy and frustrating and complicated and or expensive too. Like if you're paying SoundCloud or Libsyn or whoever. But yeah, just providing the basic link, which it feels like SoundCloud could just make a quick flag, say this is a podcast or this is a music thing, and then don't obfuscate. What's the word I'm trying to say? Don't hide.
Don't hide the download.
Don't hide the download.
They have this weird system of tokens and like one-time tokens and stuff that just makes it really hard to actually get your hands on that final file. Yeah, it's Yeah, it's kind of annoying. With the hosting thing, you're right. It is. That's definitely the hard part of podcasting. And there's a few options out there. I mean, I've used Amazon S3 in the past, mm-hmm. But again, you know, you have to be a certain kind of geek, I guess, to get set up with an S3 account. In terms of free hosting for audio files, if you're willing to license your podcast under a Creative Commons license, then you can host it on archive.org for free, the Internet Archive. In fact, they used to provide a desktop app. I think it was for Mac and Windows that you could do it all inside this app. This was a few years ago. I don't know if the app still exists, but certainly the opportunity to have free hosting, well, forever, because it's the Internet Archive, mm-hmm. That exists if you're willing to license it under Creative Commons license, whichever Creative Commons license you like.
Right, and then I think maybe where people get or archive.org gets a bad rap maybe is the speed of delivery, right? It's not necessarily going to be as fast. And so you hear people like a Leo Laporte or a Dan Benjamin or whoever, like some of the bigger name podcasters downplaying that maybe.
But no, that's fair enough. That's a fair point. That's because it's not what they do. I mean, it's not their main
exactly.
business is streaming audio. So that's a fair point.
But I think by the same token, I think most people, geeks especially, tend to put the cart before the horse and get all worried about the speed when, you know, in reality, it's just your mom maybe downloading your podcast.
Yeah.
And I know I signed up for Libsyn right away, even though it was like 10 people downloading my show. And none of those 10 people would have been worried that it took 5 minutes instead of two. And
yeah, I mean, it's the nice thing about podcasting is it's asynchronous, right? It's that, well, people can listen to it or download it whenever they want.
Yeah.
It's not like doing a live stream or a, you know, simulcast kind of thing where you do need to have a really good backbone of bandwidth set up.
Yeah. So is it basically just you, like as far as development on Huffduffer,
It is me. And
then you bring in people occasionally, like you said, with
Brad, the illustration stuff. Yeah, exactly. And thinking about it, I should really try and, you know, open it up. If I could figure out little individual tasks that I could open up to the community, because there's definitely smart people using Huffduffer, I'd be more than happy to help. So, for example, exactly what I was just talking about with, like, okay, here's the problem. People are using SoundCloud. How do I, given a document that's using SoundCloud to play the audio, how do you get the audio file? Maybe instead of me, you know, scratching my head and figuring that out, I should throw it out there, you know, blog about it, throw it on GitHub or something, mm-hmm. say, okay, anyone who wants to take this on, or more, I guess more effectively, if a group of people want to get together and discuss it and throw ideas around, that would be really good. That's something I kind of ended up doing with a different site. I have this Irish music website. It's a sort of a community site that's been going for many, many years, like over a decade. And for the past couple of years, I've wanted to redesign it, and it was this huge mammoth task, and it just seemed so overwhelming I couldn't face it. And I ended up, you know, getting some help from some people on sort of discrete tasks. And it made it so much easier for me. It was like, oh, now it's manageable. It's not like they were doing all the work. They were just doing enough work that it took a weight off my shoulders and made this overwhelming, monolithic task suddenly seem easier to do. So I should have learned my lesson from that, you know, and realized I could do the same thing with Huffduffer, that there are lots of people who would, I'm sure, be more than happy to help if I swallowed my pride and asked for help.
Yeah, exactly. I think as humans, we don't learn very well from our own mistakes.
Yeah.
Just
don't think of it. You know, it's just I must do that. I must get around to doing this task.
Yeah. Well, and even you, as a nerd, I think there's a certain pride and an ego in it as a nerd, you know, developer person, where you're like, I want it to be, not that you have trouble relinquishing some control or whatever, or, you know, credit or whatever, but it's just about like, yeah, a certain element of weakness or something that comes into play subconsciously or something.
Well, I guess there's always the learning experience. Like, if I do this, then I also learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Skype being Skype.
Yeah. It's a funny thing because, again, you know, with podcasters, listeners of the show would be very familiar with when they're producing their podcasts of Skype issues. But I have a brother-in-law that I do a podcast with that probably, again, like my mother-in-law is probably the only person listening. But and he's in Australia and in this small little town. And so internet, I'm sure, is going through like hoops and probably takes a taxi cab to get there. And and sometimes it's great. Like it's just flawless. And then the next time is terrible. But then I'll be talking with someone on a super high speed connection and Skype still manages to drop it sometimes. So
Anyway. Did you see the did you see that video that's been going around on YouTube of a conference call in real life?
Yes.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where it's too painful to watch though.
Yeah,
as a podcaster
exactly.
Anyways.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't want to see it again.
It's like a rock band watching Spinal Tap.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Is the Irish music site that you're mentioning, I just wanted to circle back to that, is that the Session site?
Yeah, that's right. Session.org. Yeah, Session.org. Yeah. That's sort of really been my labor of love, you know, even longer than Huffduffer. I guess Huffduffer's been around for a while now. It's about 2008, I think, I launched Huffduffer. So in internet years, that's quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that pales compared to the Session, because that was 1998 or 99 when it first launched its first iteration. And that's the site I guess I'm proudest of. I feel like it's my proudest achievement. Although before I got around to redesigning it, you know, over a year ago, it was also my biggest, you know, point of shame. Simultaneously, the thing I was proudest of and the thing I was most ashamed of, because it really needed an overhaul. It really needed a redesign. But yeah, it's funny because, in a way, both those things, Huffduffer and the Session, are kind of a world away from, you know, my day job of you know, making websites and talking about making websites and, you know, writing about web technologies and that kind of stuff. It's the Venn diagram of people who are in both worlds is actually pretty small.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it's just such neat as side projects go. Anyways, they're both really neat. I assume the Session, I just quickly was browsing it because I had a question actually from a developer question from a friend who had said he'd love to know more about your choice to use Plain.js JavaScript for the session.org which isn't the content of this show, but I thought I'd put it to you anyways for.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. And the answer, well, there'd be three answers, and it'd be performance, performance, performance. So I don't want to get into too much technical stuff, because I know that's not the gist of this show, but I do think developers develop the habit of reaching for a toolbox of tools automatically without thinking about whether they need them or not. Like jQuery, for example. Now, jQuery is great. jQuery is a terrific library. But I'd rather wait till I need to solve a problem and then decide, okay, do I need jQuery to help me solve this problem, or can I just get on with solving the problem? And you know, a lot of the time, I will need jQuery. I'll say, okay, it makes more sense for me to pull in a JavaScript library like jQuery or some other library. But I definitely like waiting until I need the tool before using the tool. There was a really good blog post by Rachel Andrew talking about this called Stop Solving Problems You Don't Yet Have, which is just saying the same thing. Like, don't reach for all these tools, particularly when they're tools on the client side, tools that the user's going to have to download. You know, jQuery, Modernizer, HTML5 boilerplate, all these things. Wait until you need those things and then, you know, pull them in on a case-by-case basis. So that was very much the case with the JavaScript on the Session, was that I could get pretty far just using plain vanilla JS. Also, the way I was using the JavaScript was always as an enhancement. It was never core to the site. So I kind of had the luxury of saying, well, if you don't support this piece of JavaScript, that's okay. I'll just don't execute any JavaScript. Just carry on doing whatever you're doing. In other words, jQuery and libraries like that are really good for sort of plugging the holes in older browsers, particularly, you know, older versions of Internet Explorer, where they don't support this or that feature, and the library kind of makes them support it, this idea of having a polyfill. And on the Session, because of the way I'm using JavaScript, using progressive enhancement, I kind of have the luxury of saying, hey, if you can execute this JavaScript, go for it. If you can't, don't. And so plain vanilla JavaScript has been absolutely fine for me. I am using jQuery on Huffduffer, and I wonder if I were to redo the site today, I might change my mind about that and maybe rewrite it in vanilla JavaScript. Hopefully. Sorry, that might have been too
Well, I know there's enough web nerds who listen to
this show. But I thought it's
it's not your fault, it's not my fault, it's Skype's fault. There should be I should start tagging shows in Huffduffer that are Skype deficient, some sort of FU Skype tag or something that we'll think of, and that way people
Skype-tastic.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess in sort of wrapping up, one of the things I ask folks on this show is what podcast do you listen to and what apps do you listen to them in? But one thing I just noticed in my notes that I wanted to circle back to too is going back to the tagging of shows for Huffduffer, mm-hmm. And the ways that publishers, podcast producers can help is it doesn't seem like and maybe I'm lazy when it comes to the dev side, so I could be missing something really obvious, but it doesn't seem like WordPress's default tags register with Huffduffer.
And now that's something I should look into and see how WordPress marks them up. I believe, now I have to go back and check my own code, I believe one of the things the Huffduffer parser does is check to see if the document is using the rel tag microformat. There's a microformat, so when you have the tags and you're linking to, you know, the tag space, you add rel equals tag. And it looks for that, and if it finds it, then it knows that that word is a tag. I don't know if WordPress uses that, and so therefore my issue would be, I guess I've got no way of knowing that that string of text is a tag, you know, because we don't have a tag in HTML.
Right.
But what I could do is check to see, like, does WordPress always use the same class name for the paragraph, you know, that links to, that has the list of tags, or does it have the same class name for whatever it wraps tags in? And if it does, then I guess I could build into my parser a way of looking for that. Or somebody else could build that, you know, and exactly. Share the code with me. Yeah. But you're right. If you know what you're doing, you can use the rel tag microformat. If you know what you're doing, you can add the meta keywords element. But if you're just using something like WordPress out of the box, then yeah, it's kind of more down to me to figure out that kind of stuff, which I guess I should get onto. There is one thing you can do is if you want to allow people to Huffduffer stuff easier, the URL on Huffduffer for adding something, for Huffduffing it, is huffduffer.com/add. And you can then put, like, you know, a URL. You can add query strings to that. But there's I put in a shortcut, which is let me double check what it is. I think it's URL equals referrer. So it's /add, and then with a query string of URL equals referrer, it will try and grab whatever page you just linked from. So if you have a link then on your page, on your podcast page, for listeners to click, that just says, you know, Huffduff it, and the URL of that link doesn't have to be tailor-made for your website. It can just be this catch-all add URL equals referrer. Then you've basically told Huffduffer, hey, go grab the source of this page that the user just came from and start doing the parsing on that page. So that's something that I guess podcasters could do. Right. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining it.
We should do a screencast.
A screencast, exactly. There you go. Or a comic. So there are those tricks, but there's definitely a lot of it is down to me. It's a lot of it is I need to improve the parser so that, yeah, if you've gone through the trouble of including tags on your episode page, I should somehow be able to, you know, figure out, okay, those are tags. But like I said, it is tricky when HTML itself doesn't have you know, a standardized way of saying these are tags and this is a description and this is the title and stuff. So
yeah.
It gets a bit fuzzy.
And that's what I only ask. I mean, I'm not just trying to be selfish about my own stuff because I use WordPress, but I think it is one of the defaults that most podcasters will run to first as far as setting up a show. And I was doing the dumb developer thing or whatever, where I just assumed things were working. And then I would, you know, I'd Huffduff say something from, like I said, like 5x5 or Dan Benjamin or whoever, and it looked great. And then I never actually Huffduff my own stuff because I listened to it, you know, enough already through editing, yeah. And then went and actually huffed off something out of my own just to try it out. And I was like, oh, actually nothing seems to be going there. But I, as much as I'm trying to, it maybe sound like I'm throwing it on you, I think there's an onus too on folks to help.
Well,
especially when it's a free service that you're doing.
Yeah, but at the very least, I could provide a document on Huffduffer that says, you know, podcaster, and then just, you know, a list of, here's some things you can do to make your podcast, you know, more easily Huffduffable.
Yeah.
Right. So That wouldn't take me long. It would basically be me writing down what I've just said in this interview. So there's one more thing I could do, or somebody could do, and I think we can meet each other halfway, right?
Yeah.
Yes, there's more I could be doing. There's more podcasters could be doing. But yeah, sharing the knowledge definitely would be a start.
Yeah, I see you threw it in the chat room too, and I'll put that in the show notes. As far as excuse me. Got something. I get all emotional when I talk about Huff-Duff Radio.
It's understandable. It's understandable.
We'll put that in the show notes, which you can find, by the way, to sskTN.com, and look for the Show Me Your Mic logo and then Jeremy Keith's smiling face of some sort. I haven't found a picture yet. I'll look. Plenty of pictures of you on the web, I think. So I guess, did Skype cut out again?
It did. Skype cut out a little bit again.
I said many nice things about you, so that's...
We'll okay, I'll believe you.
But yeah, in wrapping up, I'd like to hear what podcasts you listen to and then what apps you choose to listen to them in. So whether it's your top five or whatever, however many podcasts you might happen to listen to, what's...
So I have exactly three RSS feeds in my pod catcher, if that's the word we're using. One is my Huff-Duffer RSS feed, and I'll talk about what's in that. But the two that I actually fully subscribe to, in that, you know, I don't want to miss an episode, are Radiolab, because I think it's pretty great. And there's a film podcast here in the UK, which is Mark Kermode's film podcast. It's on BBC 5, and that's every Friday, and that's pretty great. So Radiolab and the Mark Kermode film podcast are the two that I permanently subscribe to, and then everything else I do through Huff-Duffer, where I kind of cherry pick. But a lot of the stuff that will keep coming up again and again in my Huff-Duffer feed, if you were to look through it, would be a lot of NPR stuff, right? A lot of kind of short things, maybe about food, maybe about language, maybe about technology, various things. I'll often huffed up episodes from the Long Now Foundation. They do seminars, I think, once a month, and they record them and they release the audio. And I'll almost always end up huff-duffing that. Then there's a lot of the technical stuff, you know, from the web world. So you'll find episodes of, things like the Non-Breaking Space show. I'll have episodes of Shop Talk show, which is really fun, with Chris Coyer and Dave Rupert. Mm-hmm. And then occasional things of, you know, the Big Web show, although now that that's switched to SoundCloud, I really have to figure out a way of getting at the audio.
Yeah.
The Happy Monday podcast, similar thing. And Andy Clark is doing Unfinished Business. So I'll grab occasional episodes of that if it sounds like it's going to be fun. Jared Spool does the Spoolcast, and those are generally pretty good. You know, I mean, it'll depend on the subject matter, whether it's something that interests me, but they're usually, you know, good podcasts. So a mixture of that kind of, you know, that technical stuff, the Long Now stuff, I guess, is more thinky. NPR stuff is a bit of everything.
Is there issues with NPR and Huff-Duffer? Because they do a little bit of that.
They've actually been okay. Okay. It depends. It depends on the show.
Yeah.
For their general radio stuff, it's generally fine. It's like, you know, those 4 or 5 minute segments, and it's an MP3 file, and you can just grab it. When they're doing more music based stuff, and I'm sure it's for licensing reasons, and they have very good reasons for doing this, they kind of make it so you have to listen in the NPR player.
Right.
So a lot of the music shows I can't get hold of, and I understand why that is. Then apart from that, it's just like cherry picking stuff from the web, like the occasional BBC podcast. You know, one episode of one series that's out in BBC, like Desert Island Discs or From Our Own Correspondent. These kind of classic, very British radio shows, and then just finding single audio files. You know, somebody made a recording of a conference talk or a presentation somewhere, and they went to the trouble of recording the audio and. I'll grab that and listen to that. So those one-off things can be where the real sort of gold can be found.
Yeah, and that's where I think part of my desire to promote Huff-Duffer is that it is a little more fun. Like most web things, properties, searches, or sites, it's more fun when there's other folks involved because you can like right now I can look through the shows that you've huffed over the years and grab random things.
And what I tried to do from the start with Huffed was that wherever there was an HTML page that had a list of, you know, audio episodes or audio files, that there would always be a corresponding RSS feed that you could just drop into your podcatcher. So it's not only that you could subscribe to everything I've huffed, but you could subscribe to everything I've huffed that's been tagged with a big web show, or everything I've huffed that's been tagged with web design. Or I could subscribe to everything that everyone's huffed that's tagged with linguistics or history or science or stuff like that. So wherever there's a list of files, there's always a corresponding RSS file. So you could subscribe straight to just the topics that interest you and have them just magically appear in your iPod when new episodes have been huffed.
Yeah, which is great because, again, not picking on, but using Merlin Mann as the example, like often he'll talk about comics and you know that he probably goes and listens to comic podcasts somewhere else. And so you could just follow the comic tag under Merlin Mann, let's say, and have that as a feed in your, and it kind of basically creates your own little podcast show that you listen to of those episodes that he happens to be huffing or whatever.
I mean, that assumes that people are tagging, you know, stuff while using the terms. But even without that, there's still a pretty good search functionality on Huffduffer. Mm-hmm. Just searching for a phrase like comics or science or something should return some relevant. It's a very webby kind of thing. This kind of, you know, just stumbling across stuff that you would never have found otherwise. I like that. You know, it's like when you're on Wikipedia and you're looking at one thing and then 20 minutes later you've ended up on this page that's like, how did I get here? Yeah. You know, what? How did I end up reading this article? I like to think that it's, you know, people end up listening to stuff that they found in Huffduffer and would maybe stop and step back and say, wait, how did I end up listening to this?
Totally. Because there is a lack in the sense of some of the social sort of podcasting can be kind of like a lone venture, both the producing and then the listening of it. It's not something you do so much collectively, but it's, I think that's what I love about Huffduffer is that idea.
Well, to be honest, I resisted very much from the start. I resisted making it another social network. Mm-hmm. I did not want to have the idea of, you know, your friends on Huffduffer and stuff like that. But I did, after the first, I guess, half year, I did introduce this idea of a collective. In other words, you can choose to add people to a collective and then you can see what that collective bunch of people, it's a terrible name, but you try and come up with a good name for, you know, a group of people. And the idea that, okay, there is actually value in saying, these 10, 15 people generally have to have stuff I'm interested in, so I want to group them all together in one place and be able to see the latest stuff that they've huffed off, to maybe subscribe to that. But I actually resisted making it yet another social network, especially when Huffduffer came out in 2008. There was a lot of sites that really were just yet another social network. So it's true enough, it can be quite a lonely activity to have the podcasting on your own and the listening on your own, but I didn't want to force people to be social if they don't want to be social.
Yeah, and that's what I appreciate too, because it's not, well, it's chicken and egg, I guess, a bit, because there isn't a lot of folks that I know, you know, if I don't, I'm not asking you to build this, but like, you know, if it had the traditional, you find your friends on Twitter who are on Huffduff or whatever, like, I don't think it needs that either. And
no, but, I think what would be more useful is more, you might be interested in this audio file, right?
Exactly.
That would be useful. Yeah,
totally. But again, that's where I appreciate that it allows me to go find that with the amount of tagging and linking and like every single, like you said, having RSS feeds on just about every single page that I could subscribe to means you can find pretty much anything you want. And
actually, so second part of your question was about what software I use to listen to.
Yeah.
So kind of related, this idea of like, I've got an RSS feed for every page, because then the question is, well, how do people get that RSS feed into whatever software they're using? I've tried out a few different apps on iOS. I tried Apple's podcast app, and maybe it's improved now, but boy, that was just crashy crash town. when it first launched.
That's the technical term, right?
Yeah. And I mean, not even that it's like the app would crash. It was crashing my whole phone. It was really bad. I mean, it was cute having the tape spool animation and all that. But
They've changed since then. It's the new version is different, but yeah.
That's right. All skeuomorphism is now banned.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I didn't go back to it. I'm sure it's better now. But I'm a bit torn because there's two apps that I think are probably equally good, and that's Downcast and Instacast. Hmm. I've tried both, and I like both, and they basically do much the same thing. They both work well. They both allow you to import an RSS feed from, for example, Huffduffer. So they both work well with Huffduffer. I found myself using Instacast more, but that's, I don't think there's any particular reason for that. It's just, toss of a coin. They both seem pretty good to me.
Yeah, it seems to be, we're headed into what feels like it's going to be the year of podcast app development, heaven or nirvana, or hell, I guess.
Well, it'll certainly be really interesting to see what Marco Arment comes up with.
Yeah, and that's what I was meaning with him sort of entering the arena.
I mean, here's me describing Huffduffer as well. It's like Instapaper for audio.
Yeah,
exactly. The guy who made Instapaper is getting into audio, so I'm sure he's going to knock it out of the park. Well, he's I guess expectations are pretty high for whatever he's got coming.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where we end up.
Very interesting, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeremy, for joining me here on Show Me Your Mic. Where can folks find you, stalk you, the usual sort of internet digits?
Well, so my username on just about everything is Adactio, Adactio. So, I'm on Huffduffer as Adactio, huffduffer.com/Adactio.
But he doesn't want to be your friend on Huffduffer. He just wants you part of his collective.
Well, yeah, exactly. If you have stuff, I'll add you to my collective. Yeah. And on Twitter, I'm Adactio as well. And my own website, that's the main place. That's my home on the web, is adactio.com. And I write there pretty much all the time. If I'm not writing blog posts, then I'm at least linking to stuff on a daily basis. Some of it's web dev stuff. I guess a lot of it is web dev stuff, and some of it's just other stuff I'm interested in, be it science fiction or Irish music or who knows what, but a bit of a grab bag.
So yeah, my thanks to Jeremy for joining me on Show Me Your Mic. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this show, this is now up into episode 36, I think we're up to, of podcast related shows here on Show Me Your Mic. And then there's other shows that we do on SSKTN. And actually, if you're interested in sort of the direction and future of SSKTN, some friends and I do a show called The Intellectual Radio Program, Adam Clark and Tim Smith. And we just recently launched or announced that we're launching a new podcast site in the next coming months. Which you can hear, which episode was that? sskTN.com/TIRP/21 will give you all the details as of right now anyways, where we're at with that. But we'd love to bring you along onto the new thing that we're building and hope you will join us there in the future, assuming we build it. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.